Hey everyone, welcome back to the Gary V Audio Experience. I'm Jacob from Team Gary, and tonight we're rolling out a brand new series of throwback Tea with Gary V episodes. This is going to happen every Tuesday night. We're calling it Evening Tea with Gary V. If you're not familiar with the original Tea with Gary V series, it's this live Q&A that Gary started back in 2020 during the pandemic. It's a really slow and tactical Q&A style series that we really hope you're going to enjoy. A lot of these episodes have stuff that's very, very, very relevant to today's time in 2022. So if you enjoyed it, please tweet Gary at Gary V. Let him know your thoughts. Leave your comments in the Spotify comment section under this podcast. And we hope to see you back next week.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
And sometimes we get pushback from business owners. You know, they're like, you know, social media is not that effective, or maybe like they don't get as many conversions off of social media. So kind of, you know, basically getting a lot of not a lot, but sometimes you get pushback from
you get pushback. I say a couple things. One, a lot of businesses are right when they push back against social because they are asking the social media experts or companies for short-term sales conversion. And the social media people are actually not hearing them.
And they're
talking about the multi-dimensional aspect of social, which is, it is definitely a communications, you know, portal, PR. It is unbelievably a brand play, like television. The amount of money that a lot of businesses spend on social is so small, and they're looking for miracles from social that doesn't come from print or Google, and then most people in social are not good at selling. You know, one of the things that I think makes VaynerMedia strong, and what makes me strong with like empathy or like K-Swiss or, you know, whatever, is I really understand how to do creative and media. We understand how to do creative and media. My organizations understand how to do creative and media to actually create short-term results. Many social media people only take on community management and some random organic content, which has no prayer to create short-term sales conversions, which leads to the mass cynicism of businesses. You know, we are in the early stages of social these first 10 years. And, you know, what that means is you have a lot of hucksters that come on and try to ride the wave and aren't actually good at servicing, you know, clients and helping people grow their business, make false promises, and more importantly, don't even understand the question that the business is asking them. And so I actually have a lot of empathy for a lot of businesses that struggle with social media, because the person that's trying to provide the results 9 out of 10 times didn't hear it or bullshitted their way to get the money but had no chance of delivering. And I think, you know, I think that's the real punchline, to be honest. But can you create short-term results? Of course you can. That's why so many brands have been built on Instagram and Facebook. Of course you can, but it actually takes real talent. I can play basketball, but that doesn't mean I can play in the NBA. And I think right now we have a lot of people selling social media that are not ready for the NBA. I, on the other hand, am fucking LeBron James.
So it's definitely a more long-term play, is really. And I think maybe that's a misconception in like the marketplace, is that a lot of business owners think that like, hey, social media, like let's get it done and tomorrow I'm going to be a millionaire. And so I think that's,
well, I mean, anytime anybody, I mean, that's my biggest concern right now with sports cards. I'm talking about it so much.
Yeah.
It's, nothing's easy. Everything takes education, executions, patience. On the flip side, I don't want to gloss over this. If somebody gave me $10,000 and said the number one thing I want, Gary, is sales, I know how to run ads on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube pre-roll to make that happen. I might not have enough money in that $10,000 to make content and run media to create the sales that person anticipates. And so that's why you have to have an upfront conversation, but most people just want to take on the money.
So really it's all about framing then when you're having the conversation with the client.
And asking questions.
Right.
Setting
right.
expectations for mm-hmm. real. Right now, this is why so many people watching right now, whether they're watching live on TV Gary Vee or when they watch this clip on YouTube or Instagram, the reason they turn so many clients is they just want the dollars, but they only get 3 months worth of dollars and get fired. The reason I've been able to build something from zero to $200 million in revenue is we keep clients because we're not full of shit up front. We really you know, calibrate what the request is, and then we go and execute.
Right.
I like that. I like that. So I think that that's really important, Gene, as we have our social media day tomorrow, is to really talk about the frame, right? And setting that expectation, even for solopreneurs that do the social media themselves.
Let me give you another example that may help a lot of people. A lot of people are paying $3,000 a month for PR and then are paying $2,000 for social media, not getting results from social media. They're mad at social media. Meanwhile, social media oftentimes can outperform traditional PR every day of the week, but this agency or the person or the internal person didn't frame social as a PR comms thing. They framed it as a sales thing, which again, it can easily be done. 90% are not good at the combination of media and creative. They're good at the creative part, the organic part, the community management part, which services as PR or brand. Again, you have a lot of B2B businesses that will buy a banner at a Little League stadium or buy a booth at a convention that they don't convert, but they do it because they have to do it. It's the cost of entry to be in the industry. Cost of entry to be in the industry of the world is to have a social media account going hard. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, any business that isn't spending $2,000 to $5,000 a month just to keep the lights on creative, just for brand, realizing that people search. I mean, to me, it's more important than your website. You know, people search to see what you're doing there, but most small social media individuals and agencies and internal operators don't position it as a comms branding cost of entry in 2020 for consumer respect and conversion. Too many businesses are in transactional mode, sales mode. We spent $2,000, how many sales did I get? But they didn't realize that one of the sales they got that month was because somebody went to their Instagram and Twitter and saw that they're real.
Wow, right. I love it.
That's true. But I mean, it's just so many times that clients really expect like, oh, you know, the sales, I need the sales.
By the way, they do need the sales. And by the way, anybody who wants to build a monster like I did have to be incredible at the ability to drive sales through Facebook media and Instagram media and LinkedIn media and Google pre-roll, YouTube content. Like it's very, TikTok's real. Influencer marketing is real. It's real. It's way harder than putting out Happy Flag Day on your Twitter.
For you as a younger entrepreneur, when you first started VaynerMedia, what were the smartest investments? Was it in people or was it acquiring distant talent?
Jordan, you literally took the words out of my mouth. It was in David Zhang. It was in Marcus Krzyzastik. It was in Joe Whitmarsh, Phil Toronto. It was in humans, Matt Sittermer. It was humans, you know, Kevin McCarthy and Tennessee, and it was there's just nothing close to the humans. It was the humans.
Yeah.
And but you have to understand, that's because I like managing people and I like people. So the answer to, you know, the answer is not for everybody. Some people are quite introverted and awkward and don't enjoy the process of humans. And for them, the answer would have been technology. You know, for a lot of different companies, the answer was, we hired 4 engineers. We barely talked to each other remotely. We built this awesome product and that started it. For me, my great strength is the enjoyment of people, the understanding of people, the compassion for people. Even when people are mean and angry and judgmental of me, even then I don't get triggered. And I have, you know, I'm so grateful I kiss my parents on the face for this. I kiss my immigrant circumstances in the face for this. My genuine love for people. I mean, right now we're going through a time in the world where, you know, in the US and many other places, enormous fractions, me versus you, you versus them. And to me, my great strength is finding that common ground of compassion, empathy, genuinely caring about your fellow man and trying to act on it. And which is always very, very challenging through a business world because you have business realities as well. But for me, it was people. So yes.
And so we're in this early stage now, obviously running an agency. We've got probably 5 or 6 staff. And I guess I was curious, I tried to jump back 3-4 years ago to some of your videos around your first hires. Who were the smartest?
Family and friends. Family and friends. Mm-hmm. I'm a big family and friends guy.
Why?
Because it's different. If you it's stickier.
Do you think it's a trust thing?
Yeah, of course.
Even if they're not experienced.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. It's family.
Because we're having that right now. We're hiring for different roles that we haven't hired for in the past, and I like.
Are you? You know, there was. Let me jump in. I apologize.
Yeah.
One of the things that I had was I knew the role.
Yeah.
When I was hiring these kids, my brother's friends from college is the answer, and high school, or hardcore fans of Wine Library TV that I knew for 5 or 6 years online. When I was hiring for them, the big key was I knew how to do all those jobs. Thus, yeah. I could judge if they were progressing. If you don't know the jobs, you're in more of a pickle in that scenario.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been doing pretty much everything strategy, sales, and marketing for about 3 years, 2 years, maybe 3 years. And my co-founder does all creative production. And I don't have an industry background, so it's been very interesting.
Me neither.
Well,
you don't have to have the experience. You just have to know them.
Yeah. Well, the hardest thing is like you said, is I was deliberating and speaking to another owner of probably the biggest independent agency here. And he was like, you really need to be particular about the role it is that you're hiring, because people are just not, they're not you. They're not going to have the same passion and be able to do all the things.
And they shouldn't. And they shouldn't. Yeah. And owners and bosses and CEOs should not hold their employees accountable to that same level of passion,
exactly,
hours, because they're not being compensated the same way.
He believes that the first hire that he should always go to if he was to pick account manager, strategist, then creative, the first should always be account manager, because they'll pay for the other two.
I understand that, and I see a lot of validity in that. I think the first hire is the single person that reverse engineers the founder, CEO, leader. So for me, that was an admin.
Yeah.
Because that was my weakest link of like not wanting to do that kind of work. So yeah. I think you hire and by the way, if you know, I don't know what that gentleman did for a living, if he was a creative or what have you, but if you yourself are an account person, potentially the first hire that matters is a creative.
Yeah. Well, I thought the wisest decision was a strategist, because I don't, you know, I'm not a marketer per se, and I come from that account management sales background. But
a salesperson matters. I've seen shops that start with 5 people that can do something, but not one of them can sell a fucking ice cream in a desert and they go out of business. I think these are all self-awareness games for all of us out here.
Yeah. Do you, if you think back to that time in those first days, how long until you realistically realize that you could stop working in that real nitty gritty of day to day where you're just constantly involved in?
I'm still in and out.
Account management. Yeah, but like you know what I mean, when you're literally the account manager, the salesperson, the marketer.
As soon as you can afford it.
Yeah.
You know, that was about 2 years for us.
So my question, could I just give a little bit of context to it?
Please.
First? So I have endometriosis. I don't know if you know the illness.
I do.
Okay.
I do.
So this year has been a little bit rocky for me. I basically dropped out of university because I had a bunch of health issues come up, and I had to have a surgery, and I was pretty much failing all my classes, and it was just really hard to kind of do the health thing and do my, you know, university stuff as well.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. But what's ironic is through all of that, all of the art and the you know, all of this has been one of the biggest things that has helped me, to be honest. But at the moment, I'm in this really weird situation where I don't know whether I should go back to university or if I take a break. And I know that, you know, I know your opinions on college and that.
And listen, just to take the platform, like my opinions are college works for some. It just doesn't work for a lot more people than the world has accepted.
Yeah.
Especially people that take on debt and get a degree that gives them no ROI the second they walk out of school. Like that is incredibly scary to me. That's a very big US problem. Obviously other parts of the world have education paid for in different ways.
Yeah.
But I also think it's about happiness. I mean, like I always think about why. Like, why do you go to college? Do you go to college to, people are like, well, Gary, it's not just about the degree, it's about the social growth. I'm like, well, you can go backpacking through Europe to, you know, like you don't, you know, you could be around young people and not pay for the education part, you know?
the reason I feel like my attitude towards it has changed over the last couple of years. I've dropped out twice. So I dropped out in my second year. I took the whole year off for endometriosis. That was the year I was diagnosed. And that year was the year I basically taught myself digital art. So I kind of went like completely opposite direction. And now I have this thing that I absolutely love and I do it every single day. And I try to put myself out there on social media and everything like that. But I feel like I'm kind of, my head is always in two directions. Like I have this creative side and then I have this academic side. But what comes with the academic side is like the literal pain I experience.
Well, I mean, think about that. Just
I know.
Rewatch this. Like even if it was 1975 when college's ROI was extraordinarily strong and you couldn't really get it, you could get a job immediately and you couldn't get one without it. And it paid for itself based on the cost of the degree. Even then, if it's literally brought you pain, the answer is it's not a good idea. You know, I mean, I think, you know, at some point here, people are going to realize happiness over money. Like at some point it's going to happen. I just believe it. And it's going to flip the world upside down. And I think a lot of the things I debate and think about will come into focus during that time.
Yeah, I was going to say, so this is one of the biggest reasons I started listening to you. You're honestly, I'm so sorry. I'm really nervous at the moment. I'm so excited to be here, but your content honestly changed my life because I feel like I tend to judge myself a lot unnecessarily. I really don't need to be like that. And I find it really hard to snap out of that sometimes. And I just honestly turn you on and listen to, like, I listen to your content day in, day out. Creating stuff based on your content is one of, like, I've said it before, but honestly, it's just one of the, like, most positive things that I've done with my time. And, sorry, I was just going to say. So I wanted to.
I'm wildly flattered. Keep going.
I just wanted to ask, like, I know you talk a lot about like, you know, when you do or don't do something, you don't judge yourself for it. And I just want your perspective because like I tend to tie my self-esteem up in a lot of these things. And like, what is your advice for like letting go of that completely?
By focusing on realizing, like it's almost by muting the accolades more than the negativity. I think what's really worked for me is the humility leads to the ability to not have your self-esteem wrapped up in the win or the loss. To me, it was about when things were working for me, not thinking that I was special or better than anybody.
Yeah.
It was actually in the humility that I found peace. Yeah. Now, I don't come off as a humble person because I talk loud, I'm aggressive, I'm competitive. I like sports, I like competition, but in my real kind of core, I don't think I'm special in any shape or form. Yeah. I really genuinely don't. I genuinely do not.
Yeah.
And because of that, when people say you're a genius or you saved my life or all these things, you're the GOAT, it feels amazing. I'm so grateful. It's so nice. However, I don't take it to heart. I don't begin to believe it. And so what that also means is when somebody says, you're full of shit, you suck, you're the worst, it allows me to not get torn down. And so I just stay in the middle. Like to me, I think a lot about being 100 years old. And do I care about what an anonymous person or even my cousin thought of me at 100 or at 75 or being terminally diagnosed. I mean, you've already had a health scare. You know, you can really use this. I think you have to think back to the judgment you had growing up. That doesn't mean demonize your parents or your circumstance. It means just understand it because they probably had the same thing happening to them. Yeah. And really just reframing. So I talk about positivity and practicality into your ears. The reason you're in a better place is you've been listening to a lot of what I'm saying, which I'm grateful. And it sounds like it's bringing you some value. I mean, ultimately, when you realize you don't matter that much, it is actually liberating.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
That's how I do it. That's the truth. between that and realizing what's important to me, like, who cares if my business failed or my post didn't do well or people think I'm a bad guy? Like, my parents are healthy. And as long as that's like, just keep it simple and keep it humble. Keep it simple, keep it humble. Yeah. Keep it simple, keep it humble. And you will watch your happiness explode. That doesn't mean stay complacent. I'm the fucking most hungry, ambitious person you'll meet. But I really, really just keep it simple and humble.
Yeah.
Gary V, what's up, Gary?
What's good, Robbie?
Hey, so I just had a few quick couple of questions I wanted to ask you. First of all, I love your show, by the way. I've been watching it for a couple of years now. Thank you.
Thank you. Where are you from?
Texas. Dallas, Texas. Yeah. So what I wanted to ask you was, you talk a lot about self-awareness and like becoming an entrepreneur and stuff. And when I was a kid, I noticed I had a lot of those tendencies, but I kind of bought into the whole, you need to be good at school in order to do well. So I just like went ham like 14, 18 hours a day into it. And it was a mistake. So I was like depressed, unhappy. So my question is, I know you talk like, look back when you were a kid to see what you were doing, but what if you've just like struggled with depression all this time, so you weren't really doing anything? You know what I mean? Does that
make sense at all? Of course it makes sense, which is why all the stuff I talk about are hypotheses and ideas, but they don't always fit for everybody depending on it. So what you're referring to for everybody's watching is a lot of times people at 20, 21, 22, even 30, 40 are asking me, Gary, I don't know my passion. I always ask them, well, what do you do as a kid or what do you like? But sometimes you don't have to go as far as what you did as a kid. It might be, Robbie, what you're doing right now. Like, I'm a big fan of paying attention to what people consume. Like, for example, I've been so busy with the All In Challenge, trying to keep the companies along. Just a lot of shit. Black Lives Matter. There's been so much. But in the few minutes that I've had to myself, I've either looked up sports cards and bought them on eBay or have watched wrestling documentaries on WWE OTT. That's a clear indication of who I am right now, even of what I like. And begs the debate that if I started a podcast around wrestling wrestling cards, which, oh, by the way, I genuinely believe are underpriced and like have a big opportunity, that would make me incredibly happy. Now, I'm wildly happy doing what I'm doing, so I won't make that pivot yet. But I always do wonder if I'll ever have a breaking point in all the pressure that I have to hold. And am I okay with selling it off or walking away and just doing something simplistic like garage sailing or sports cards or things of that nature? I would really look at what you gravitate towards doing. Like, what do you watch? What do you do? Like, what do you like? You know, like, what is it?
I would say
music, sports, video games, cooking, travel, skiing, you know.
Video games and probably fiction writing. And also, I've been reading a lot about entrepreneurship too, but I know you got to actually get out there and do it too.
Well, you got to fiction write and you got to play video games or record it. So there's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong with educating yourself or consuming. The push I give when I'm like, what you got to do is that's the truth. Like you can't, you know, nothing will happen by watching my videos unlimited. Like you have to do that thing. There's nothing wrong with consuming. It's just that if you use consuming as the justification that you're doing, you tend to get unhappy.
Right.
But I mean, Robbie, you're in a place where you can start YouTube videos and Instagram accounts and TikToks around video games and fiction writing. You can literally write the first page of a fiction story that you have in your mind in the notes app on your phone and post that on Instagram with 12 followers. And that could be the moment. It's unlikely, but it could.
Right. That's true.
Wow. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
You gotta lean into your interests. It leads to happiness. You're too young to give up on happiness. You know, people that are 75, I'm willing to say you can give up on happiness. And what I mean by that is not giving up on happiness. I mean, professional happiness. I would say, okay, you're 75, fuck it. You're allowed to go to save your money or whatever. And just, but yeah, hopefully you save some money. If you want to go to Florida or Arizona and just golf, like, cool. But if you're 52 right now and you hate your fucking job, I don't want you to keep doing that because there's another 20 years likely of you working based on what I'm seeing in the numbers. These like fuck already. Like, this is why I don't want people to buy houses that are too expensive for them. I don't want people not to buy houses. I don't want people to buy houses that they can't afford. I don't want people to not buy cars. I don't want them to buy cars they can't afford. I don't want people to not buy jewelry. I don't want them to buy jewelry that they can't afford. I'm buying fucking hundreds of thousands of dollars of sports cards, but I can afford it. Nobody, like, that's stupid if you can't afford it. I want people to drink $6 coffees if they can afford it. I don't want them to buy it when they can't. Saving money is incredibly important. Living within your means is incredibly important. And more importantly, having a job you hate or doing something you hate just to pay for stuff to make pretend you were happy, that's the worst of them all.
Right.
You've already lived that. You fucking thought you had to do something. It made you unhappy and it became a spiral and you became very unhappy.
I'm 25 right now. I feel like I'm 50 sometimes.
Bro, you're super young, bro. Please promise me, Robbie, that you understand how young you are. At 25, yeah. I was stocking bottles on shelves in a liquor store on this exact moment. For real. Checking in orders 100% at 25 years old. 100% at this exact moment when I was 25, deliveries would come to Shoppers Discount Liquors. I think I renamed it to Wine Library by then. Wine Library. Deliveries would come. 10 cases of Doors Scotch, 5 cases of Budweiser, 13 cases of a Sauvignon Blanc I bought. And I would fucking check in the invoice. Okay, we got 13, check. I would sign the invoice. I would then send it to the get a hand truck, ship it down a conveyor belt, take one case of the 15 Sauvignon Blanc, put it on the shelf, get a piece, like a little card that I had, write the review of the Sauvignon Blanc, put it up. Customer walked in, where's the Scotch? Right over here, ma'am. Right? That was my life at 25. I was a fucking schlepping in a liquor store.
That's true. So
No. Stick with me here, fucking Robbie.
Okay.
Like, all this right, is I'm huge. That's what I was doing at 25.
Yeah.
You have unlimited time.
So if you were to, because I know you worked in a liquor store, and that's actually the second part I wanted to ask you about was with the work ethic part. I have a lot of experience with that, but where I don't have experience is I grew up kind of middle class. So that kind of like lower class hustle you always talk about, so to speak. Like I just graduated from college.
Listen, a lot of things I say people take as blanket. I see themes, but I have highly wealthy friends that grew up rich on the Upper East Side with unlimited grind and work ethic.
Okay.
I think your work ethic will explode when you're doing something you love. For example, I have great work ethic, but I don't stay up to 2 o'clock in the morning working on Empathy, the K-Swiss deal, the VaynerMedia. But I stayed up to 2 o'clock in the morning buying sports cards the other night because my passion was off the fucking charts.
Okay.
I think most people are not lazy. I think they're doing something they don't like. I'm unbelievably lazy in school. I'm unbelievably lazy if you ask me to hang 6 pictures up in an apartment. I can work for 18 hours straight when I love it. Work ethic oftentimes maps to the thing. I think too many people deem themselves as not ambitious and lazy when in reality it's because they don't like what they're doing.
Right. So would you, if you just got a job, or I just graduated from college with a license in speech language pathology.
Do you want to do that?
No. No, I don't at all. So my question, but would you, in order to make money to kind of support yourself, I mean that, I'm kind of limited
to Texas. There's two ways to think about it. One, and obviously let's take COVID out of the equation a year from now, hopefully. So you know what I mean? Obviously those are some variables. Yeah. One, you live really humbly, aka at your parents' house, at a girlfriend, boyfriend's house. I don't know what your situation is, or with 6 homies in a shithole.
Yeah.
Then it allows you to go real ham if you're fucking caught, if you're paying $100 a month in rent because you have 6 other roommates and you fucking sleep on a couch. It all depends on where you're at. You know, you can get a speech pathology job. And then my concern with that is that you then live a lifestyle based on that salary, which never lets you really save and go on to the other thing. You could get a speech pathology job and live like shit, so you save like a fucker, and you could save for 2 years worth of living, and then you go and jump at 28.
Right.
I'm a little bit more into the happiness, even those 3 years saving kind of suck, even when you have this great mission. But there's a million different examples. I mean, there's 25-year-olds that have 2 children and have responsibilities and like can't live in a shithole because they're scared for their children. I mean, there's a million scenarios out there. But for you, like, where do you live?
I have no debt. I'm in Dallas right now. I have no debt or anything. My parents took care of. So I'm just thinking, should I just like pack up somewhere and like become a bartender or something. Like,
you should definitely first of all, you should kiss your parents on the face and thank them, because no debt's a monster.
Absolutely.
I think you should start creating on the internet to get a taste if there's anything you like. If your entrepreneurial tendencies were around flipping and selling, like buying and selling stuff, you should give that thought. If it was more about like macro entrepreneurship, because there's a difference between operations entrepreneurship, sales entrepreneurship. Sales entrepreneurship is an incredible trait because it always lets you breathe, because selling lets you breathe, you know? So I think that's what you have to think about.
Okay. Okay. I was much more on the idea, kind of wanting to go my own way side versus more the strict selling side. Selling is one of the skills I've had to work kind of to build up.
I mean, there's also partnerships. You have any really good friends who, like, you know, you might want to team up with? That's always a fun thing to think about. Like, if I said to you right now, you have to start a business, you have to, it's like the rule, new mandated law, what would you do?
Right. Probably try to become a writer. That's where my talent is. So maybe dive into that.
Bro, you have to start writing. Do you write?
You're right.
Like, do you put out your writing in the world?
No, I don't. I need to think of a way to do it. I've heard like Wattpad and stuff like, but beyond that, I don't really know.
Wattpad's incredible. Wattpad for everybody. W-A-T-T pad. But I also think Instagram's incredible. I think writing stuff on like I said, on notes and just posting it. I think then taking that and making a YouTube video where you read the story, you know, fiction, right?
Fiction. Yep.
Listen to me and listen to me good. You need to seriously consider just writing the first 10 pages of a make pretend story, putting them out on Instagram, reading them on YouTube, putting them out on TikTok. I would do that for a year and see if anything clicked. You might have the next Harry Potter or fucking Star Wars in you, but you don't even know. But by putting it out there, you might see people jump on it. Start, you know, Reddit has some great communities where you can start a make pretend land. Bro, you gotta go, Robbie. You gotta eliminate the insecurity of feedback. Of like, remember, I think it's great, and then everybody else that says it sucks, tell them to DM me, and I'll tell them to go fuck themselves. You know what I mean? You gotta put it out.
I've been really indecisive and negative, Gary, but you've helped it a lot. Thank you.
What did you say, Rob?
Oh, I've been really indecisive and negative for a lot of the time, but you've helped that a lot. So thank you. You've given me a lot of positivity.
I appreciate that. Why do you think that? Because I want to learn from your feedback, because I want to do more of it, because it's the greatest feeling to bring that kind of value to somebody. Like, what clicked for you?
Doing, I would say growing up, making like nothing but A's, even though a lot of people like with my disabilities told me I would make like C's, D's, fail, stuff like that. It was a lot of knowledge.
And the disabilities were what? Like dyslexia and like common, like the cliche.
ADHD, yeah. Auditory processing, slower processing speed, all that sort of. Yep. An amalgamation of things with the depression stuff. Understood. Yeah.
And did that make you feel inferior?
It made me attach my self-worth to praise. So like A's, awards, because that was all I ever, I mean, I'd even sit in during lunch.
You were showing them, you showed them, see, I can.
Right. Because I had the ambition and that was the direction I was sort of given to go.
And what did your parents think of that?
I think they're starting to realize more and more that school never was for me. My mom's the very type A accountant, like go make A's, stuff like,
I understand. Listen, so anyway, I apologize. So what do you think really clicked for you?
With your videos?
Mm-hmm.
Just your very positive nature of you can go out, do anything, just tell people, you're just very frank that you have to live for you. In a lot of ways. And it was a way that came across as genuine. Yeah.
And what I don't think people understand is when you go to that level of selfishness, there's an incredible ability to become selfless. Me making myself happy over this whole process now allows me to be the man that I am that sits here for an hour every morning, desperately wanting for you to be happy with no interest or expectation for anything in return. Because it comes out of gratitude that I've navigated to this place and I want it for everybody else. And if I'd not done that, I would be needing, not giving. Right. Had I not gone that route and thought that I needed everybody else's affirmation to live, I'd still be grabbing for that right now and I'd have no opportunity to give. It's the person that's the happiest that is able to give. You know, it's the same reason that all the trolling and negativity online, I feel bad for those people because they're in a bad place.
Yeah.
Of course you can't be compassionate or nice. You're not happy.
That's true.
And so what?
That's absolutely true.
The communication style and the format, it just kind of, there was a practicality to the way that I was describing it that felt real to you.
Yeah. And also your resonated with school isn't the only way. And I always felt out of place in school, even though that's where I spent all my time. Cause I just thought, well, that's the way you do things. And
yeah. Well, listen, I wish you nothing but good, Robbie. Please do me a favor, please. I have a weird feeling about this. And really, I'm probably just being selfish right now because when you're on fucking Colbert talking about your book, you're gonna be like, big shout out to Gary V. I really think you should write 3 to 5 pages. How many different stories do you think you have in your head?
Really good ones, maybe 3.
How many solid ones?
About 3 or 5.
How many okay ones?
About 10.
I want you to put out all 10 pages of each on the internet for free and watch your fucking life change. I'm giving you the straight formula. I rarely do this. As you know, I talk more. I need you to write the first 10 pages of each of those stories, all 10, not 3. When you lose the high of this moment, I don't need you to go to actually the only one's good. No, all 10. Because what you think is just okay might be the fucking one.
That's true.
Because you don't get to decide, they get to decide. Got it? I want you to write the first 10 pages for all 10. I assume in the way that it fits in an Instagram post, that's probably 20 to 5 posts per story to get to 10 pages worth. I don't really know the math in this, right? 30 posts, well, 15 posts, you know what I mean, right? Like literally, you know, like part, and don't do a carousel. This way you can do like 4 posts a day. 1 of 10, it was an early Wednesday morning. Like literally, name it. And I want you to do that. Then I want you to read it on YouTube, just like this, face to camera, read it. That's your YouTube content. And then I want you to figure out some sort of version of one of the two on TikTok. I want you posting on all 3 of those and add Twitter to that and do the same thing you're doing on Instagram. I want you to do that every day for the next 3 months of COVID. I'm telling you, it can change your life.
Thank you, Gary.
You will be blown away, Robbie, by the random emails that you will get or DMs. I don't think it's crazy that you're crying on Tea with Gary Vee on October 9th because you signed a book deal about your fucking Fantasyland book. I really believe this.
I believe it
and
too.
You're going to be happy doing it. It's way more fun than bartending.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Just do it, Robbie. Just fucking do it, please.
I will.
What's your handle on Instagram?
I have no Instagram right now. Instagram right now. Yeah.
Right. You're gonna do all that. You're gonna set. Robbie, listen to me. Please don't let this moment pass. Please set up those accounts. Don't be scared. You know, start the process of getting comfortable with not needing affirmation. Start getting comfortable with the person that leaves a comment that says this is dorky. Start getting comfortable with the person coming along that watches this show, but unfortunately is still hurt inside themselves and comes and says, "I saw you on Gary Vee. You're not gonna make it. This story's stupid." Start getting comfortable with that. Start letting that feed you. Start letting that get you excited. That's them. They're down. They're down, not you.
Get that excited. God, I hope I can
I get excited. I get excited when people say I'm shit or that I'm going to fall or that you suck or you're overrated or I don't get why people like him or he's bad. I get excited. That shit feeds the fuck out of me.
Charges you.
They're confused. They think they're tearing me down. They're fucking feeding me. You can't beat something that's unbeatable.
That's true. That's very true, Gary.
Please use this, okay, brother? I really weirdly believe something good's gonna happen. I like weirdly, like genuinely in my bones, and my bones are right more often than not. I think something good is gonna happen, man. Please, can you please promise you'll deliver on this? I really think you'll be happy. Even if nothing crazy happens, you're going to feel so good at the end of these 3 months.
I will.
I believe you.
I promise you, man. I'll contact you if anything happens, man.
Please do. Thank you.
All right. Dustin, thank you, Gary.
You're welcome, Robbie.